Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
It's the List
and the Chris
at Fightful.com with Jimmy Van and
Chris Van Fleet.
They're on fire. Boom shakalaka.
200 strong.
That intro's well, so good.
Welcome. This is Fightful Wrestling. This is not the List and your boy. This is the second edition of the List and the Chris. You know me, I'm Jimmy Van, the founder of Fightful.com, and I am being joined today by former backyard wrestling champion. His name is Chris Sharp. Check out this picture from 2001.
Oh,
there he is.
Wow.
Look at this guy.
Look at that hair.
Frosted tips. Man, in sync back in Toronto, Canada. Look at that. Tell me about Chris Sharp, man. Tell me about this.
Chris Sharp was sharp talking, sharp walking, as you can see from that photo, Jimmy. Sharp dressing, two-time HCW backyard wrestling champion. And that photo was on Jonovision. Remember Jonovision?
Absolutely, I remember Jonovision.
Jonathan Torrens, the guy who played, what was the character? J-Rock on Trailer Park Boys. He was a TV host in Canada, like when he was, I don't know, 20 or something.
Yeah.
And he hosted a show called Jonovision. Remember Street Sense? He came from the show Street Sense.
I remember that too. Yes.
So he was on Jonovision, or he hosted Jonovision. I was a guest on Jonovision as a part of this episode where they were talking about like create your own whatever. And we had created our own backyard wrestling company. It was so silly, but I actually pretty decent. Chris Sharp had a finishing move that made no sense. The setup was, that's incredible. Remember the spinning tombstone that Justin Credible used to do? And then I would climb up and do a swanton bomb, which I gotta say, if you search really, really hard, you will find clips of my swanton bomb. It was pretty good. It's a
really
pretty good swanton.
Okay, now was it the kind of swanton where only the back of your head hits the guy?
Yes.
Because okay. I'm not a fan of that one. Whenever you would see a bigger guy do a swanton, the bigger guys, they would do it where only the back of their head would hit the guy, because otherwise it could be a tough bump for the guy to take on the
right
ground. But I always hated it because I thought, how is that supposed to hurt? It's the back of the dude's head.
But that's how Jeff Hardy originally did it.
Was it? Because he did eventually he went full body.
Which I just think because the bump's a lot easier for him to take.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. But thank you for having me back on. I would like to propose a new title for the show.
Really? Let's hear it.
Two Vans, One Vleet.
You're so clever. I got to ask you one other thing. Now, I chose not to take a video clip of this.
Uh-oh.
I was going to, but I chose not to. Were you back in the day, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, you must have been a Triple H fan or a DX fan. You must have been. Do you know why I'm asking you that?
Was it the tape that I, oh no, the water spitting, right?
Yeah, on your entrance for a backyard match, you did the Triple H water spit.
Yeah, definitely. Huge Triple H fan. It's funny because it was Austin McMahon in the Attitude Era that got me into wrestling. Like I was watching zero wrestling till I was like 15 years old. In fact, my dad hated it. Both my parents did not enjoy wrestling. My dad would get so mad and stand in front of the TV like, you are not watching this. And I would like do that thing where like the back button on the remote would be like the Leafs game or the Blue Jays game. So I'd be like, oh yeah, I was just watching the Leafs. They're losing again. 3-1. I can't believe it.
Uh-huh.
So when I got into pro wrestling, I started watching everything. It was Raw and Nitro and SmackDown and all of it. So Rock, I was a huge Rock fan, but then like there was something about Triple H when he had the entrance theme, 1-2, is this on? And by the way, it's 1-2, is this on? It's amazing to me how many people thought it's like want some or wonton. Actually, write in the comments what you thought those lyrics were.
I thought it was pretty clear. Seemed pretty clear.
I thought it was clear too. One, two. Check. Is
right.
this on?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it'd be very interesting to see. Everybody thinks, you know, it was something else. But yeah, Triple H was a huge fan of just that. I mean, he was the ultimate heel in like 2000, 2001. And that entrance theme is so good.
Interesting. Maybe the next time I have you on, I'll grab that clip because I watched it. And boy, Chris Sharp, what an intimidating young man he was. I want to mention one other thing before we get into the news here. So actually, I'm going to mention two things.
I just want to mention one thing. He was so intimidating that he might poke you in the eye with his spiky yellow hair.
Yeah, and probably do some damage because I'm sure that there's product in that hair.
There's plenty of product in that hair. It's probably still in my hair.
Next thing I want to do is I want to actually give you props because so if you guys go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Fightful, I have started focusing more on our shorts. I started doing so after having a conversation with Chris Van Vliet, who told me about the success that he was having on his YouTube channels doing shorts. So I decided to get more into it, more involved. I recruited an editor, and we're doing some pretty good numbers. We're seeing some quick growth on our YouTube channel. So kudos to you for that, Chris Van Vliet. It's working out well.
Happy to hear it. I feel like I should be teaching some sort of a course on this, which is actually maybe something that'll be coming up around the corner here. But while we're talking about YouTube, if you're watching this right now and you're not subscribed, my main channel is Chris Van Vliet. Maybe someone could put that in the comments. And then I've got the Clips channel, which Jimmy referenced, CVV Clips, which maybe someone could also put in the comments there. And I just did an interview with LA Knight yesterday. It already has 110,000 views. So if you want to check out the full interview, that's on the main channel. Tons of clips on the Clips channel.
Awesome. He better win Money in the Bank. That's all I got to say. So
I hope you talk a bunch about that because, he needs to win Money in the Bank.
Yeah. We're going to talk about it. This week, AEW is in town here in Toronto, Canada. They're running four shows between Forbidden Door and Collision, and they're in Hamilton for Dynamite tonight. They're taping Collision in Hamilton tomorrow. I want to show you a throwback photo. I had the opportunity this week to reconnect with an old buddy that I hadn't seen in quite a while. Check out this photo from June of 1999, if Joel Pearl has it. Now, it might be hard to see.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, if you look on the far right with the jean shirt there, that's me from 1999. And if you look between the Bushwhackers, standing right behind the Bushwhackers, that would be a very young Justin Roberts.
Man, look at those 1999 baggy pants.
Yeah. I guess that was the style at the time. And you can see right behind Justin there is the late, great George the Animal Steel.
Yeah.
And over on the far left is the late Sherry Martel, who was amazing. Sherry was awesome. Oh my,
look at all the legends in this photo. That's a great photo.
Yep. So that was the first time that I ever met him. And we had the opportunity to reconnect this week. Justin's a good dude. And time goes by, man. 24 years ago was the first time we met. So I wanted to throw that up. And that is an awesome segue into some AEW. So I want to get your thoughts on this. Now, first off, let's talk a little bit about Forbidden Door.
Sure.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Forbidden Door was never intended to be for the casual audience. There are always going to be AEW haters that are going to try to shit on the company saying, oh, you don't properly introduce the wrestlers from New Japan. You don't give us an opportunity to know who they are. If you feel that way, Forbidden Door is not for you, and it never was for you. This is for AEW's devoted fan base, is for the smart fan that watches wrestling coverage from a variety of various companies. And keeping that in mind, I think Forbidden Door was a very well-received show. Omega and Ospreay is being considered an all-time classic. But again, depending on what side of the fence you're on, if you're the casual fan, you're probably giving the show mixed reviews. If you're the devoted fan, you're saying it's an all-time great show. What were your thoughts on Forbidden Door?
I think you nailed it, Jimmy. If you're the casual fan, I'm willing to bet you probably didn't even see Forbidden Door. And you maybe saw a few clips online and went, not my cup of tea. And that is totally okay. Because like you said, this is for somebody, not just an AEW fan, not just a New Japan fan, but this is for somebody who enjoys that style of wrestling. And I think that they knocked it out of the park. I would actually say that this was a much better card than Double or Nothing was. And there was so much buildup into Double or Nothing, but there weren't a ton of matches on that card that made people go, oh man, I need to buy this event. With Forbidden Door, there were actually matches there, unlike last year's Forbidden Door. And there was, I mean, obviously some issues there with a lot of injuries, but there were matches this year where people went, I never thought I would see this person versus this person. I need to tune in for this. I think this is going to go down as one of AEW's best pay-per-views of the year, because top to bottom, these were all just fantastic matches with great storytelling.
And I should also note here, get in your super chats on YouTube if you want your question or statement run on the air, or go to humperchat.com. If you don't want to donate through YouTube, get your question or statement run on the air that way as well. And I should have noted, because I got Chris Van Vliet on the show today, if you want to ask Chris Van Vliet about any of the interviews that he has done, if you want to ask him about Dakota Johnson, if you want to ask him about The Rock, if you want to ask him about whatever the girl's name is from Knocked Up, because I forget.
Oh, Leslie Mann. Yeah.
There you go.
Maybe you want to watch me, ask me about the Anne Hathaway interview that I get tagged in almost every day, where I was a forward young man. I got tagged in that again this morning. But yeah, and if you want to ask me about the conversation that Jimmy and I had about creating shorts and growing your YouTube channel and maybe actually getting monetized on YouTube, we can do that too.
There you go. So anything that you want to ask us, send in your super chats to get that done, or go to humperchat.com and send in your question statement, and we will read it on the air. All right. Now back to Forbidden Door.
Yeah.
One person that I've always been a big fan of, even before AEW began, is Kenny Omega. He's somebody, I've never been a huge Japanese wrestling fan, but I've always been a fan of Kenny Omega, because he's somebody, it's hard for him to not catch your attention because of how good he is in the ring. I wanted to ask your thoughts on that infamous spot now that happened in the match with Will Ospreay. Of course, it was the Tiger Driver 91 spot where Omega was dropped on his head. Now, one thing that people need to understand, because some people, you know, on some of the discourse that I saw on social media, some people tried to make like it was a slip. There was no slip. That's kind of how that move works, is yeah. You get dropped on your head. Fortunately, Kenny Omega was fine afterwards, but what were your thoughts on that spot? Do you think, you know, they're taking too many risks and eventually, you know, things might not go the way they should? Or do you think these are two professionals, they've been doing this for a long time, so it's perfectly fine? What were your thoughts on that spot that's been getting a lot of attention?
Well, there's certainly two professionals that have been doing this a long time. And on top of that, they are also arguably two of the very best in the world. No matter what style you like or what company you like, you know, these are two of the very best at what they do. So they know what they're doing, right? That's one of those spots that they want people to go, oh, and that's exactly what all of us did and are still doing. Here we are half a week later, we're still talking about that spot. So I think that it accomplished exactly what they wanted to accomplish. But that's got to be a tough thing for someone like a Daniel Bryan to watch going, oh man, you know, I was retired because of neck injuries. I would just hate for something to happen to these guys. And I know they're working safe. They clearly know what they're doing, but there's got to be a certain element of that where you go, man, a millimeter this way or that way, we could be having a very different conversation.
Let me see here. We got some super chats and humper chats. Kevin Slitter says, I felt this year Forbidden Door was better than last year's.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you thought it was a better show?
Yeah. And I just think that, you know, when the idea of Forbidden Door came around last year, we all went, oh man, we're going to finally see the dream matches we've always wanted to see. And we saw some great matches last year, but we actually saw some of the dream matches this year. This is going to be tough to beat, though. This is going to be a really tough card to beat when they do Forbidden Door again next year. And I will say on top of that, I'm not just biased because we're both from Toronto, but that Toronto crowd adds an extra element because they're just such rabid fans.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to love a good Toronto crowd. Ian Hunter says, Forbidden Door was amazing live. Such a great show. Also got to meet Kate and Joel at Forbidden Door. A couple great people you got there. Awesome. Wouldn't you know, I was actually out of town from Saturday until Tuesday. You'll know this, Chris. I was at my cottage on the St. Lawrence River. You know where that is.
Of course. Some of the best smallmouth bass fishing in the world. Woo! Were you using some weight tungsten drop shot weights there to catch some smallmouth?
I didn't have time to fish, but I wasn't able to see Forbidden Door. Sean had actually said to me, hey, so Kate's going to be in town. Denise Salcedo is going to be in town. And I didn't get to see anybody because wouldn't you know, I was out of town that exact same weekend. But I'm glad that Joel took care of people and did what he had to do.
Nice.
We have a Humber Chat from Daniel. He says, hi, all. CVV, I loved your Danhausen interview. Do you have any other wrestlers you would like to interview with no kayfabe?
Oh, that's a great one, because the Danhausen one is really interesting. I interviewed Danhausen completely out of character, no face makeup, no voice, none of that. And it's so interesting. If you haven't seen it, go check it out on my YouTube channel. It's interesting because he talked all about like where the character came from, how he came up with the voice, all of that. Fascinating look behind the scenes at who his character was. And there's a lot of people that are like, amazing. I love Danhausen even more because of this. And then there's the other audience that goes, you gave me too much. I don't like this. And it's just so interesting that we still live in a time where people are divided of like, no, I don't want kayfabe to be broken. And there's other people that are going, tell me all you can tell me. It'll make me more of a character. So to answer the other part of that question, we haven't really seen an interview with Orange Cassidy. We've seen Orange Cassidy in character. I've done two, call them interviews, I guess, with Orange Cassidy, where he says like one word in one interview and maybe three words in the other interview. I would love an hour with Orange Cassidy to just talk about like, where'd this character come from? Who were you before you were Orange Cassidy? And dive into all of that. I don't know if this will happen while he's actively wrestling, but I think that'd be a fascinating conversation.
Very interesting. Very interesting. You know, it's wrestling is this interesting medium where the wrestlers, they essentially, at least they used to, maybe less so now, but they used to live their characters all the time.
Yeah.
And so seeing a guy who plays, you know, a character that is far removed from, you know, Donovan Danhausen, to see him go from the face paint and from that character to talking as himself, you never would have seen that 20 years ago. It just wouldn't have happened. Like, you wouldn't see Glenn Jacobs 20 years ago, you know, not being Kane, being Glenn Jacobs doing a public interview.
Yeah.
And so that's a fascinating thing today that it just wasn't possible 20 years ago.
And really the only person that comes to mind right now is MJF, who's like in character every time the camera's pointed at him. To a lesser extent, I think that Roman Reigns does that too. Like, all of Roman Reigns' interviews have a touch of who his character is. Like, he was on Impulsive, Logan Paul's podcast. Really interesting interview, but he just kind of kept like circling it back to like, well, you know, you got to acknowledge me. Like, you know, he kept coming back to like character work. And I was like, okay, I like that.
I'm sorry, is that your Roman Reigns impression?
Yeah, that's acknowledge me.
Amazing. We got a super chat from Vasco. He says, what are your dream matches for Forbidden Door 3? So maybe Chris is a better person to answer this, because I'm not the biggest fan of New Japan Pro Wrestling, but I will say this. I would love to see a reunion of Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega. Mm. I'd like to see a reunion of the Golden Lovers tag team. And so maybe they get back together for a tag team match against a team from AEW, or against a combination of an AEW wrestler and a Japanese wrestler. That, I think, could be very fascinating.
Yeah, that's really good. I keep going back to like, There is a forbidden door. It's a brilliant name, by the way. It's not a true forbidden door if we can't have people from every single wrestling organization. So if that were to ever open up, I know it won't, but you know, if we could dream, I think that those are where you start to see the matches of like someone in, maybe it's a three-way, someone from WWE and AEW and New Japan, maybe throwing someone from Impact. Those are the matches I want to see. Give me Will Ospreay versus literally anybody. I mean, if you saw my interview with him, you know that I'm a big Will Ospreay fan, and I just have such an appreciation for the way that he works. So look, him versus Kenny is going to be really hard to top anywhere. But if they could do it again, look, I hope they do it again before Forbidden Door 3, but I'd love to see that match again.
Imagine, say, Ospreay, Seth Rollins. They talked on social media. You know,
yeah, Ospreay even said, like, that's the match he wants. What about, like, CM Punk needs to be worked into Forbidden Door 3 if he's still with the company or still actively wrestling at that point in time. That feels like that was a missed opportunity, but I understand why it didn't happen. But there's some matches there, especially with enough buildup, that could really get people invested.
Yeah, everybody wanted the Kenta match.
Yeah.
And it just didn't come together, so... All right. So, Chris, let me ask you a question. Do you like to save money, Chris?
Love saving money. Big fan of saving money.
Well, if you want to save money on pay-per-views and browse the internet securely and safely, NordVPN can help. Joel, take it away.
Buying pay-per-views on NordVPN.com/Fightful is going to enhance your pay-per-view buying process. Now, one subscription to NordVPN has so many different benefits, but if you're a big pay-per-view buyer like myself, UFC, boxing, pro wrestling, all that good stuff, any combination of the three, if they're doing a fight circus or something like that, this subscription will pay for itself after one or two pay-per-view buys. Change your virtual location, pay for it at the prices that other people are paying for it in the UK, in Australia, etc., etc., and you can get different interfaces. Maybe you don't like Peacock and you want to check out the WWE Network the way that it used to be, the way that it was designed to be, the easy navigation, so on and so forth. Maybe you want to watch AEW without commercials. Maybe there's some other overseas services that you can't subscribe to and you want access to them. NordVPN.com/Fightful gives you that with a great deal and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Even better, 24/7 tech support. So if you have trouble navigating any of it, they can help you out. Fastest VPN on the planet, NordVPN.com/Fightful.
Beautiful work, Sean Rossap. We have a super chat from Daniel. He said, I haven't been watching wrestling as long as either of you, but I think most people can see there is something that makes Bryan Danielson special. His Forbidden Door entrance was awesome. On the microphone, facial expressions, in ring. Is he the GOAT? If not him, who? I'll let you tackle that. What do you think?
It's been amazing watching Bryan Daniel and now Daniel Bryanson's,
other way around. Yeah. Other way around.
Let's do that. Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson. There we go. It's been so interesting watching his rise. I was there at WrestleMania 30. Yes-lemania. And it was basically like he was so over that they couldn't ignore him. And it was so incredible watching almost like a Rudy story at that time in WWE of like the guy who's just such a great worker and delivers every single time he's out there and being able to watch him grow, also come back. I mean, he was retired way before he was done with wrestling. He's very, very good. Certainly in the conversation for top five that are working right now, without question.
I will often get asked about who do you think is the greatest of all time? And I think that it comes down to category. I think that just naming one wrestler, I don't really think is fair. I think you have to look at who is the biggest draw of all time. What's the best character of all time, the best in ring of all time, the best all around performer of all time. I think there's different things you have to look at in that regard. And so I would have Bryan up there, maybe in a certain category. But can you say that he was the biggest draw? No. And so I wouldn't say he's the greatest. But the same thing can be said for anybody. Some people think Shawn Michaels is the best of all time. Was Shawn Michaels the best promo? No. Well, did he have the best character? I don't know. So would I put him as the greatest of all time? No, but maybe the best in ring. Like, that's why I look at it from a character perspective. Or not a character perspective, a category perspective.
Yeah. So absolutely. And it's always so interesting when you start to have the Mount Rushmore conversation, because you have the categories of like, you know, biggest draw or best in ring and all these different types of things. I go back so often to like, if we're talking about people that are wrestling right now that are the best of all time, it's really hard to make an argument against Chris Jericho with everything that he's done in his career, the amount of times he's reinvented himself and the new character has gotten over. I mean, think of all the characters he's been. Lionheart, Y2J, Suit and Tie Jericho, List Jericho, Painmaker, Ocho. All of them have been over. So it's so hard to make an argument against Chris Jericho. So I throw him up there too as the greatest of all time that are currently working.
I agree. I would put him up there as well. I'm sure his haters don't want to hear that, but I think Jericho definitely deserves to be up there. All right. Let's talk about the latest going on with CM Punk and with the Elite. So Fightful Select reported that Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks were kept on a different side of the building from CM Punk at Forbidden Door. Now, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I think that long-term, keeping these guys apart is not going to work. I think that there needs to be some kind of a sit-down. There needs to be some kind of a meeting. I know I'm an old-school guy, so I'm going to give you an old-school reference. And it's not apples to apples, but it's kind of close. So back in the late 80s, you might remember hearing the story, Jacques Rougeau The Rougeau brothers and the Bulldogs had a conflict. Jacques Rougeau sucker punched Dynamite Kid behind the scenes with a roll of quarters, busted up his mouth, busted up his teeth. The very first thing that Vince McMahon did was call a meeting with the Rougeaus and the Bulldogs. And I look at that and I think that's what AEW needs to do. They need to get these guys together in a room. And I understand that there might have been legal repercussions and whatever else, but these guys are professionals. These guys are veterans. They've all been doing this for a long time. I think they need to be brought together, and I think they need to resolve this. Now, I do want to ask you your thoughts on something, because this is something that Sean Rossap has kind of speculated or suggested. Do you think that maybe the Young Bucks and Omega are holding off on that meeting because their contracts are coming up this year and they want to use this for leverage on a new deal? Do you think that might be playing a part in it at all, Chris?
That's such an interesting component here, right? It's such an interesting fly in the ointment, if you will. I can't see the Young Bucks or Kenny Omega leaving. Like, I just can't see that happening. But then again, I also didn't think Cody Rhodes would have left, and you know, look at him now. I just think that if we were in any other workplace, you would have to be sat down with that person. Like, if we worked in an office and you and I didn't get along, Jimmy, and there was some massive falling out, I feel like our boss or HR would bring us together and go, look, I know you guys don't like each other, but you've got to work together for the sake of this company, for the greater good of this company. I know we don't know exactly what happened between those two parties, but I feel like they've got to figure out some sort of way to hash this out. And I don't know if this is an ego thing. I don't know if it's just, you know, one party saying, I'm not going to talk to the other party or vice versa, but I feel like they need to come together. They don't have to like each other, but all they have to do is come together and work together. Or maybe this is just some big work that build up to some massive match here. And we've all been played.
Right. Just like the Montreal Screwjob, right? Just like that.
I mean, if this is actually a work and this all leads up to an incredible match at All In, I know we're all going to be invested. I'm going to take you back quite a ways now, but remember the Edge Matt Hardy real life storyline at WWE? I remember I wasn't even buying pay-per-views at that time, but I remember like calling my friend Greg and going, we are buying this pay-per-view because I'm pretty sure Matt Hardy is going to kill Edge. And it was a pretty stiff match, but like that, maybe that's what this ends up being.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. I mean, you know, obviously it's a different time. And if we're being quite frank, I mean, financially, these guys are in a different atmosphere now than they were back then. I'm sure Matt Hardy probably felt a little pressured to do the match because he wasn't at the level of Edge in terms of his star power at the time. But I, the Bucks and Omega and Punk, I mean, these guys are veterans. These guys have been doing this for a long time. You think that they could be professional enough to do what they got to do. I just think that a year from now, if Punk is still with the company a year from now, and the Bucks and Omega for that matter, and a year from now, if we're still talking about, okay, there's a pay-per-view coming up and they got to keep Punk on one side of the building and the Elite on the other side, I just don't see how this is going to work long-term. You know,
I wonder if this was one of the contingencies for Punk coming back of like, I'm going to come back, but just make sure that I don't even see those people. I don't know.
He said in the ESPN article, he claimed he tried to reach out to the Bucks. And he said that the Bucks, not the Bucks, but somebody told him speak to a lawyer. But the thing is I don't know if that was the Bucks voluntarily saying that or if they were told to say that. And so there were certain people in the wrestling news community that were kind of shitting on the Bucks for that. But we don't know if that was an order given to them. And so I don't think it's fair to really assess unless you know. Okay, another Forbidden Door note. Bryan Danielson broke his forearm in the main event match with Okada. Brie, his wife, posted the x-ray on social media. Looks like it was a clean break. Bryan had said 6 to 8 weeks was the recovery. Brie said it's worse than they thought. And so it could be a longer that he's out. So I don't know. Some people criticized the match with Brian and Okada. And I didn't have a big problem with it for a number of reasons. The first reason was it had to follow Ospreay Omega, which is going to be very difficult. That was number one. Number two, Brian did injure his arm during the match and broke his arm. So I didn't think that it was as bad as some of the discourse that I saw online. I also want to give props to Bryan Danielson for his performance in the scrum afterwards. I thought he was excellent in the scrim afterwards. He's a very likable guy. He's very honest. He will answer any question. They even asked him about the Tiger driver spot during that scrum. What were your thoughts on the match and you know, what happened to Brian during the match?
I think you raise a lot of good points there. Like, anyone would have a tough time trying to follow how good Ospreay and Omega was. But like, can we give Daniel Bryan, you know, kind of a little bit of a break here? Like, wrestling with a broken arm, and he kept going for 10 more minutes.
10 more minutes.
There's a lot of people that would have just, you know, said, oh, roll me up, man. Like, I'm in a lot of pain. My arm is broken. But like, the fact that he kept going, I think really speaks to his character. And Bree kind of said something of like, should I be proud of him for continuing to go? Or should I think he's, you know, an idiot for continuing the match? I thought the match was fine, difficult spot to be put in, but the dude broke his arm. I mean, come on. I feel like we should be celebrating the fact that the match continued to go on. I'm curious, Jimmy, what's your take on how the press scrums have been going? Because they've evolved a lot since the very first one that I was a part of, AEW Double or Nothing in 2019. They've evolved a lot from then. I feel like in 2019, they were very almost newsy. Like, they weren't really in kayfabe. And I feel like now they're very kayfabe. Even Tony Khan, to a certain extent, is very kayfabe in those.
I mean, he kind of always has been, you know. I mean, you know, one of the knocks on Tony is that when he does interviews, he spins everything into a promotion. So you'll ask him a question and then he'll spin it into, you know, by the way, Dynamite this week, we got this or whatever. So my take has always been, I like the concept of the scrum. It gives it more of a live sports feel because I just like the concept of it. I've always believed that Tony should not sit with the talent at the scrum.
Why do you think that happens? I agree with you.
Do you want my honest opinion? So this is my honest opinion as an outsider. I think he likes the publicity.
Hey guys, have you ever wondered what happened to the legendary Chuck Norris? I saw a video he made and I was shocked. He is in his 80s, still kicking butt, working out, staying active. He looks like he's got more energy, can work out longer, even has plenty of that energy left over for his grandkids, and he did this by making one change. He said that he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife even started doing this thing too. She's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger, her body looks leaner, has energy all day, and Chuck's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their health. Staying active is important. Moving around keeps you feeling good. Making sure that you take care of your gut health, your digestion, just overall, is also very important. Right now, you can go to mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Watch Chuck's video right now. That's mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Check out what Chuck Norris has to say. What's got him feeling so good these days? He explains everything, and you won't believe how simple it is.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried and true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's just my honest opinion. I think he likes to sit there because I think he likes the publicity and I think he likes being part of the whole thing. I don't think he should sit with the talent because I think that he is a distraction when he sits with the talent. Now, it might have been Sean that said to me on a podcast, well, he does it because he wants to keep things flowing and keep timing going and stuff. You can do that without sitting there. You know, you can either...
Back in the day, they used to have the PR person standing there going, okay, guys, two more questions.
Exactly. Yeah. You can either sit on the side. If you want to be a part of it, you can either sit on the side or you can do what WWE does. Have somebody else, like you're suggesting, time things out. And then you have your turn to answer questions just like everybody else. And I think that's how I would do it. I think that he is a distraction when he sits there. Oftentimes when a wrestler asks a question, they'll look at Tony because they almost want him. They're not quite sure what they want to say.
Yeah.
So I don't think he should sit with the talent. I think that he should give himself his own opportunity either before the talent or after the talent are done. But I don't think he should sit with them. And that's just
The way it used to work was like, and I'm talking the first six pay-per-views, was they would bring out three or four talent and then Tony would come out at the end and they would say two more questions and Tony would go, no, guys, I'm happy to answer all of your questions. I'll be here all night. And he would sit there for 40, 50, 60 minutes just answering all the questions. I will say though, that him sitting there, it doesn't matter who he's sitting next to. He does make some great facials.
He does. He does. Yeah. I just don't want to see another brawl out scrum situation.
Which also kind of raises the question of how different would that CM Punk press scrum have been if Tony wasn't there? Would it have been better or worse? And I'm thinking it probably would have been better because we wouldn't have seen Tony going through all the emotions that he had to go through during that.
I think it would have been the same from Punk's perspective. I think that he would have gone off regardless. And I think that it would have been, and I'm sure Tony Khan has probably thought about this 1,000 times, and hindsight 2020, I think that he should have kind of reeled Punk in and kept him on topic. But if he wasn't there at all, then there would have been nobody, you know, to kind of try to reel Punk in anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a tough situation. Something tells me that brawl out scrum thing will never happen again. I don't think, because I think that even a guy like Punk probably knows better. And I think that Tony Khan knows better and won't let him go off for 20 minutes again, like he did the first time. So, all right, let's talk about some AEW collision stuff because of course, Chris, already people are trying to read eulogies for collision, Chris. It's only been 2 weeks and people are already trying to read eulogies for collision, which is really ridiculous. So last Saturday, the show averaged 595,000 viewers. It was a 27% drop from week one. The key demo rating, which is the 18 to 49 demo, it was down 36.4% to a 0.21 rating versus week one. Like I said, I saw a lot of discourse online. The AEW haters are celebrating. So I want to go ahead and throw in a dose of reality, Chris Van Vliet. So here's the situation. Number one, it was inevitable that the rating was going to drop from week one to week two. It was inevitable.
Yeah.
We every show, whether it be Dynamite, whether it be XFL football, everything, you're going to get the curiosity factor week one. It's going to drop week two. So that's point number one. Yeah. Secondly, it's way too early to pass judgment on the success or failure of a show. I think you got to wait at least 6 months and see how the thing is doing at that point. As opposed to passing judgment now. That's number two. And here's the third point that I want to make. And this is, again, reality. If you go back to June 10th, which was the last Saturday night before Collision started, and if you look at what Collision did this past Saturday, they would have still been number six for the night had they aired the week of June 10th. And they were going against a lot of live sports competition on June 10. The Stanley Cup finals were going on. The UFC pay-per-view prelims were going on. A lot of strong sports competition. And yet last Saturday's Collision would have still finished number six for the night on cable. So I think that to pass judgment and say, oh, the show's dead in the water, it's just way too premature. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, that's not what wrestling fans are all about, though. Like, you can't say, like, let's wait 6 months to really feel this out and get a few storylines under our belt and go through a few different seasons and different shows. That's not going to happen, right? But I think that it would be smart to be able to look 6 months from now and then look back on, you know, is the show successful or not? Then we can pass judgment on it. I think that is the real barometer here is what did that time slot do for the network before Collision was on there. And I'm sure that the numbers are much higher now. I would have to think that the network's happy that they've got this many more eyeballs watching the show than were previously watching the network on a Saturday night. So I think that that's a big thing that nobody seems to be talking about. And really they should be talking about that. But look, like you said, you have the fall off after week one. I mean, they hyped up CM Punk's return. That was a big thing. Of course, you're going to have some people fall off from there. And there's the thing that we've always talked about. Saturday nights in general for television, not just pro wrestling, but in general for television is a difficult ask because there's so many things that are going on for anybody on a Saturday night that you could be doing instead of sitting down and watching TV.
Yeah. And a 0.21 key demo rating, that'll get you top five every week. Like every week.
And these are the, I love that you're putting this spin on it because nobody's talking about those things. And if you've listened to me for a while, you know how I feel about television ratings. They are not accurate. They are completely skewed. The Nielsen rating method is so insanely archaic. It doesn't even make sense that we're still using that model. Like, I can't believe that that's still a thing. But unfortunately, it's the only thing that we do have right now. But the idea that like it, this is still a top five show, a top five show. I mean, that's huge. You can't just pull that out of your ass.
Yeah, I think they're fine. I mean, we don't know how much Warner Brothers Discovery is paying AEW for Collision. We know that they gave them a cash injection for the show. We don't know how much. I think top five is fine. And like I said, I think passing judgment after 2 weeks is just way too premature. You have to give it some time. We have a super chat from Mr. Acosta right along this topic. He said, big fan of your interviews, Chris. I like you too, Jimmy, LOL. And then he said, thoughts on recent Collision ratings, especially since it was the go-home show for Forbidden Door 2. And we've already answered that. I think that people,
I will say that go-home shows are always so interesting to me because you know, like, nothing's really going to happen on them. Like, the matches for the weekend are already set. That's the go-home shows for me are always kind of like, yeah. Remember when WWE used to always like take these two people who were wrestling against these two people they are wrestling against, and they would put them in like a tag match or a three-way or a six-man match. And I'm like, guy, I really don't care if this is happening. I'm going to watch the pay-per-view anyway.
Right, right. We got a super chat, a humper chat from Daniel. He says, will Forbidden Door always be in Toronto? I know you two might be biased, but I think it would be really cool for Forbidden Door to be all over the world. The first spot should be in Japan. I really hope for the next Forbidden Door, Stardom is a part of it. I don't think it's always going to be in Toronto at all.
Yeah. I don't think so either. No. I also think that AEW probably learned a lesson from doing Double or Nothing in Vegas, maybe one too many years in a row. So yeah, I think Forbidden Door will be somewhere else. I think it'll be in a wrestling city. Like it'll be in a city that's like jacked up about wrestling.
Right.
Maybe it's in London. Maybe it's in Chicago or Philly, but I think it'll be in a hardcore wrestling city. But yeah, I don't think it'll be in Toronto every year.
I don't think so either. I think it's also good to put it in a town that's enticing to the traveling fan. Because I think a lot of traveling fans came to Toronto for Forbidden Door. So I imagine that's going to happen. All right, let's move on and talk about some WWE stuff. The first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to get your quick picks on Money in the Bank. Money in the Bank is this weekend. Good old Sean Ross Sapp is enjoying life in London, England right now. He is over there. He was at the WrestleTalk Studios doing some stuff with them today. So let's get some quick predictions from you, Chris Van Vliet. Roman Reigns, Solo Sikoa, The Usos.
That's actually a tough one to call. Like that one could really go either way. But if I had to make a decision right now, I'm going to go with The Usos win, but Roman doesn't take the pin.
Fascinating. Do you think we could see a new Bloodline member maybe?
Ooh, maybe. I mean, who could it be?
It's funny. I was joking with Sean about this. So there are a lot of people, you know, of say Samoan descent in wrestling, but they're not necessarily related to Roman Reigns. But then again, The Rock's not either. And, you know, they talk about how he's head of the table. So you can blur the line when it comes to that kind of stuff. There are options if they wanted to go down that road. But I guess we'll see what happens.
I wish at some point that Jacob Fatu finally just went, yes, I'm going to go to NXT/WWE.
Could be a fascinating addition. Yeah. All right. Here's the thing we were talking about earlier. The men's Money in the Bank ladder match. I'm going to ask Chris Van Vliet, Logan Paul or LA Knight. Who takes it?
And it's funny that you've narrowed it down to those two, because I've also seen a lot of chatter online about Damian Priest. And I think what we saw this week could make sense for Damian Priest to win, cash in on Seth if he's still the champion. But I think it has to be LA Knight. It has to be LA Knight. He is so red hot right now. I actually said to him in the interview, you're red hot right now. He's like, well, if I'm red hot, I want to be white hot.
Yeah.
The crowd reaction that he gets right now, and he really hasn't been put in a spot that's really getting him over. Like, he's gotten himself over. And to think about this, he's pretty much still a heel. So if he did a full babyface turn, he should win Money in the Bank, but if he does win Money in the Bank and as a babyface, it presents another problem for WWE where they're trying to push Cody so badly as Cody's our main babyface. Cheer for Cody. LA Knight's getting bigger pops than Cody right now. So what kind of issue does that set up later on down the line when your biggest babyface isn't even the guy you're pushing the most?
I think it's okay if they keep LA Knight on the other brand. So if they keep LA Knight on SmackDown, they keep Cody on Raw, I think you're okay. The only issue is now I've talked about this before. I understand the perception from WWE or the line of thinking within WWE, Logan Paul marketing, you know, he's a very attractive to a demo that we want to plug into. I understand why they would want to consider Logan Paul for Money in the Bank. I think if you shit on LA Knight one time too many, the fans are going to eventually give up on him. Because like you said, his rise has been organic. His rise is not the result of the way that he has been positioned or pushed. His rise is a result of his own work, starting with Elimination Chamber and Bray Wyatt. And it was basically his own work that got him to this position. And then so many times, oh, he's finally on television. He lost to Xavier Woods. He's finally on television. He lost to Santos Escobar. You can only do it so many times. He's got to win. The problem is because he's on the SmackDown brand, he ain't beating Roman Reigns. It's not going to happen, but he also has a year. He's got a year. And so I think that they should let him ride it out for a while. There's no reason for him to cash it in too soon.
And he told me he's got some, shirts coming out in the next few weeks here.
There you go.
That's going to be a top seller. It's also coming out with LA Knight sunglasses, which is brilliant. Awesome. I actually think Logan Paul is the new Shane McMahon, because when Logan Paul is inserted into a match, you go, damn, what's this guy going to do? I mean, think of the Royal Rumble. Think of the frog splash off the top through the announce table. Like, Logan Paul plus ladders equals an incredible opportunity to do something that's going to make us go, oh, my God. I don't think Logan Paul needs to win this match to have to be over or to have the most talked about spot of the night. And I think that's going to happen. Logan Paul is going to do something so silly with ladders, maybe also with Ricochet there, that's going to make us go, man, Logan Paul's great, and I'm really happy for LA Knight.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm sure that Logan Paul and Ricochet are going to cook something up too, you know? So, all right, what about the women's Money in the Bank ladder match? This one is interesting. You've got Io Sky, Trish Stratus, Zoe Stark, Bayley, Zelina Vega, and Becky Lynch. Who's your pick?
I actually think this one's really, really tough to call. I'm going to go with Io Sky here. I don't feel as strongly as I do about LA Knight, but I just think that that one makes sense with kind of the way that everything's lining up.
I would love to see Io Sky win it and go after Asuka. I think that would be a lot of fun. That's a matchup people have been looking forward to seeing. We'll see. The interesting dynamic in this one is, okay, you got Io Sky, but then maybe Bayley, you know, stops that from happening. Then you think, well, maybe Zoe Stark's going to get a shot. Well, Trish Stratus is in there too. And these people are aligned, but when it comes to a title shot, maybe they're not going to want their friend or their partner to take it. So I agree with you. It's kind of a hard one to call. Some of these other matches to me are pretty easy to predict. Seth Rollins, Finn Balor. Rollins is not losing to Finn Balor.
No. And I love what they're doing with, I keep calling him secondary title Seth, because it's so unfortunate that the World Heavyweight Championship has come back, but it's not quite a world title, even though they want to call it that. I like what Seth is doing with this basically open challenge. And, you know, he's a fighting champion. I think that he continues to be a fighting champion. I think that he wins this one for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. What about another one? It should be interesting though. Cody Rhodes, Dominic Mysterio. Now, do you think there's any possibility Brock Lesnar shows up, costs Cody the match, and that leads to their third match at SummerSlam?
That would be some really smart booking, and I wouldn't be surprised if that happens, but I understand why this match works on paper. You've got the guy who gets the biggest heel reaction in Dom, and it's so brilliant. Dominic Mysterio as a heel is so brilliant.
Yep.
And then you've got the guy that WWE is pushing as the biggest babyface in Cody. So putting them together makes perfect sense, but Cody has to win this match. I mean, it makes sense for Cody to win this match. I also don't know where it goes from here. If Cody does win, how does this set up a SummerSlam match if Brock Lesnar doesn't inject himself into this match in some sort of way?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be doing the SummerSlam push after the show. So if it doesn't happen at Money in the Bank, it would have to happen on Raw afterwards.
Yeah, but a lot of what's going to happen at Money in the Bank is going to shake out into SummerSlam. So really curious how that one comes out. But I think that whatever happens, Cody's going to look great coming out of that match.
Yep, I think so too. All right, Intercontinental title, Gunther versus Matt Riddle. Now, I know Gunther's had the title for a while. I don't think Matt Riddle's the guy to take the belt off him. What do you think?
I don't think this match even really makes sense to me. Gunther is fantastic, and I could be totally okay with him being the Intercontinental champion for like the next 6 years. It's so good. I love that he's given that championship like a real like value again. Like he's making it feel important again. So look, have him in a match with anybody and it's going to be a really solid match. I just think that he keeps bowling through people.
And the women's tag team titles, Ronda Rousey, Shayna Baszler, Liv Morgan, Raquel Rodriguez. Ronda and Shayna haven't had the belts that long. I don't see them losing.
I agree with you there too. And I feel like there's so many amazing matches that are happening on this card that they're going to have to do a lot to make people want to pay attention to that match, I feel like.
So Chris Van Vliet is a new father. We've talked about it. How is your sleep since you had a baby, Chris Van Vliet?
Not great. I'm getting some sleep. My wife is getting a significant amount less, but not great.
Not great. Well, if anybody else likes to feel rested and maybe like Chris, they don't, and you want to sleep better, our friends at Helix Sleep can help. Take it away, Joel.
When I'm traveling, the thing I miss the most is my bed. That's because I've got a Helix Sleep mattress. I worked with Helix Sleep before it ever became helixsleep.com/Fightful. During the pandemic, I needed a new mattress. My back was hurting. I was sleeping on a slab of memory foam. It was not working for me, but I didn't want to go to a mattress store. I wouldn't have wanted to even if it was the pandemic at the time. But I looked up and found helixsleep.com/Fightful. And I found a ton of 5-star reviews. I found a ton of benefits. There are so many different options. There are options for people who sleep too warm, people that want their spine aligned, people who want just anything. And how do you find what you need from helixsleep.com/Fightful? You take an online questionnaire, and when you fill it out, they will find your preferences and match you up to the mattress that works for you. I got the Dusk Lux model. And right now, you can get 25% off any purchase for a limited time using the code FIGHTFUL. And you get 2 free dream pillows. I've had a lot of neck issues, and helixsleep.com/Fightful has really helped me out in this regard. It's been put over by Wired, GQ, Good Housekeeping, all kinds of people. Most importantly, Fightful. But they have over 30,000 5-star reviews. They have great flexible financing plans, and it comes straight to your door. If you don't like it, after 100 nights, they'll just come get it for you. What do you have to lose? Invest in your sleep. HelixSleep.com/Fightful.
Sean does a very good ad read, by the way.
There you go. Yeah, he's taking
notes.
He's got a second career waiting for him if he wants it. Who knows? All right, we're in the home stretch. Get in your super chats if you want your statement or question.
Yeah, get those super chats in.
Or go to humberchat.com, send in your question or statement, and myself or Chris Van Vliet will read it, and we will answer just about everything. All right, we got to talk about Vince McMahon. We got a super chat from Rock Hard Joel Wood. He says, Jimmy, given that it's been a few months, do you still think that Vince McMahon gets voted out by the board next year? So I don't know what kind of language is in the contracts. Now, he's talking about when the new co is created. As soon as the Endeavor deal closes and a new co is created, Vince McMahon's going to be the chairman of that new co. I don't know what kind of protections are in the deal to prevent an election. Eventually, a board election is going to happen. And when a board election happens, I do not think Vince McMahon will remain chairman. But who knows when that will be? Who knows if there's protections in the contracts? Who knows if they can't do an election for 12 months? I got no idea. And so it is what it is. But I want to get your thoughts on a report from Fightful Select about Vince McMahon. Fightful Select reported that Vince is making plenty of changes remotely via phone to WWE television. And there was frustration at almost every level of WWE with respect to changes that were made to last week's Raw and SmackDown episodes. They have reportedly been trying to Vince-proof the shows by advertising matches in advance, because Vince generally likes to make good on the advertised matches if possible. What are your thoughts on, Vince? He's in there. He's changing things last minute. They're trying to Vince-proof the shows. What are your thoughts on all that?
I think that even when we didn't think Vince had his hands on the product, Vince still had his hands on the product. We probably just weren't hearing about it as much. I don't know. I think that as long as Vince McMahon is still alive, that he will still have some sort of say on what happens, certainly on Raw, probably on SmackDown. I don't know if there's anything that can be done that will change this. And I do know that if LA Knight doesn't win Money in the Bank, I think we can point at one man and go, oh, it's because of that person.
Maybe. I mean, you know, I will say this, and here's the irony of the situation. Vince or no Vince, WWE continues to crush it. And this past Monday, Monday Night Raw, they averaged 1.97 million viewers, which in today's television landscape, those are some pretty big numbers. They did a 0.61 rating in the key demo. And to give you an idea of how big that is almost double what Dynamite did last week in the key demo on Wednesday night. They were beaten only by the College World Series, and they beat everything on broadcast television in the key demo. So WWE is still on a roll. To what do you credit this continued momentum? Because when you look at Raw, there's a lot that is getting over right now. I mean, Seth Rollins is over. Gunther is over. Kevin and Sammy, Becky Lynch, Cody Rhodes, Judgment Day, even Alpha Academy. There are a lot of acts on Raw that are getting a buzz. To what do you credit this continued momentum with those kind of numbers?
I think for me, it comes down to the Bloodline. Like, I think that the Bloodline was such an interesting storyline that it brought people that were on the fringe or brought those casual fans back in. And then they went, oh, you've also got some great stuff going on with all of these other things. And WWE rode a huge wave of momentum into WrestleMania. And now they're riding that huge wave of momentum out of WrestleMania. And they've just been doing some really good booking. And I think at the end of the day, people forget that WWE is a business. It's a publicly traded company. And I mean, I could pull up my stock app right now, but if you had put your money into WWE like 3 years ago, you would have doubled it by now. So say what you want about WWE, whether you're a fan or not, WWE as a business is more successful than they've ever been.
For sure. Are you to the stock market, Chris Van Vliet?
Yeah, I am.
We should talk. I am too. Let's talk.
We could do a whole other show. I'm very curious what their market cap is right now. Look, one share sells for $108. Crazy. Yep. 1 year ago today, that it sold for $60. You would have almost doubled your money if you put it in last year at this time.
Yep. I don't.
Market cap's $8 billion.
I don't like to talk details too much, but I will say I got WWE at 80 and I got Tesla at 105. That's all I'm going to say about it. We had
WWE at like 55, maybe like 2019. And I'm like, I'll sell it at like 61 or whatever. And I'm like, hey, I made a few bucks. Jeez.
Better than Tesla losing. Thing,
my goodness.
Better than losing, right?
Got yes. You only lose if you sell, right?
There you go. Yep. Rock Hard Joel Wood, he says, so far, Vince's changes haven't really affected my enjoyment of the product. In my opinion, the best case scenario is he continues to give his input, but not actually be at the shows. I mean, obviously, that's better than you know, sitting in Gorilla. But I can understand the frustration level if you are a part of the creative team or if you're even a member of the talent roster when you think you know what you're doing and then someone comes to you and says, it's been changed, and it's like 7:50 p.m. on a Monday night. I can understand how that's frustrating, but I agree with what Joel is saying. At least it's happening remotely and he's not sitting in Gorilla and adding that extra level of intimidation.
It would also be so difficult if like you've been told in the afternoon, like, all right, this is the promo. You're going to go out there and do this. And then 7:50, they give you a 2-page new promo with a completely different objective. And you're going, oh my God, how am I going to figure this all out? And that apparently happens all the time.
Yeah. We got a super chat from Rayan Muhammad. CM Punk merch sells on AEW shop is the top selling for the week, month, and year. AEW has an attraction in Punk. His quarter hours for Collision are the highest ratings, and he is the number one face heel with the crowd. I don't think anybody's arguing that. I mean, yeah. Punk is their number one draw. That's when you really think about it, how many members of the talent roster in AEW could do what Punk did in terms of the things that he said at that talent scrum where he essentially shit on executives of the company. That's what he did. He said the Bucks couldn't run a target. He shit on the executives of the company, and he continued to get paid for 10 months, although I know he was injured, but he continued to get paid for 10 months. Then not only did they bring him back, but they give him his own freaking show. Yeah. How many members of the talent roster could do that? There's no question that Punk is a draw. Otherwise, these opportunities would not have been given to him.
Nobody's arguing any of the points that you made in the super chat. You're absolutely right. And Punk is the reason that the numbers for the first episode of, or I guess his debut on Rampage were so big. He's the reason that the numbers for the first episode of Collision were so big. And people love wearing his merchandise. But the thing about, I mean, you can go either way on this, but the thing about him saying everything he said in the press scrum and then coming back without any public repercussions, at least, kind of makes it seem like you can just say whatever you want and it's okay.
You know what? One thing I learned in business a long time ago, and I've told Sean Ross Sapp this behind the scenes before, is when you are in management, you know, when you manage people, one thing that you have to learn is that you have to eat shit sometimes for your top producers. And that's the reality of business. And Tony Khan probably knows that as well as anybody, because he's eaten a lot of shit for CM Punk. But sometimes you have to do that. I mean, the guy moves numbers. That's just how it is.
I'm really curious, Jimmy, when we have the same conversation a year from now or 18 months from now, how are people going to feel about CM Punk? Because I feel like him having this little bit of an edge to him actually makes him really exciting. The summer of Punk, happy to be here, Punk, or the happy to be here Punk that returned in AEW was cool. But this Punk is much more like the CM Punk that did the pipe bomb. That's a little bit edgier and makes people go, huh, what's he going to say or do next?
I agree. He's polarizing. His fans love everything he does and his detractors think he's a piece of shit. So he's a very polarizing personality. After this, go to FIFOselect.com. We're going to do The List Goes On, which is kind of like the after show after we do this podcast on YouTube. So check that out. I got one more thing for you on this show before we go to The List Goes On, just because you might know this person or you might have some connection. So WWE announced that Jackie Redmond is going to be joining Raw as a backstage interviewer. Before she was doing some studio work for WWE, but now she's going to be joining Raw as a backstage interviewer. Kathy Kelly's moving to SmackDown. Megan Morant is now going to host Raw Talk, and she's going to do other studio work. Being Canadian and being from Toronto, I'm very familiar with Jackie Redmond. She follows a line of people that have come from sports talk television in Toronto specifically, right to wrestling, from Mauro Ranallo to Arda Ocal to Renee Paquette, and now to Jackie Redmond. You're from the Toronto area. Have you ever had any connection to Jackie Redmond or to any of those other people that I mentioned?
All of the other people, yes. Jackie, I think I had moved out of Toronto by the time that she was on Sportsnet, right? Sportsnet's where she
That's
came
right.
from?
Yeah.
WWE knows exactly what they're doing here. Like, take someone who has like just great broadcasting abilities and throw them into the mix and they'll just knock it out of the park. Like, Renee will be the first to tell you she wasn't really a wrestling fan, didn't know a ton about it, and then started talking about it and going, yeah, I can be passionate about this. I look, congrats to Jackie on this position. I'm also curious, like, when are they going to have another dude backstage interviewer? It's a lot of women doing that role right now.
What are you trying to say, Chris?
I'm trying to say, like, you know, maybe bring me in for a few questions. I can hold a microphone.
Well, I've been a fan of Jackie's for a while.
She does great work, by the way. I just want to put that out there. She does great work. Congrats to her on this position.
Yeah, and she and one thing that she has in common with, say, Arda Ocal, Mauro Ranallo, when they were doing sports talk television in Toronto, they would oftentimes talk about pro wrestling because they were wrestling fans. So Jackie would talk about wrestling. Arda Ocal was an enormous pro wrestling fan. Yep. And so I can understand from WWE's perspective, these people have the legitimate sports broadcasting background that we might like, but they also know wrestling. And I think Jackie's going to be a good fit if they let her showcase her sense of humor, because, you know, sometimes you put the handcuffs on. But if they let her showcase her sense of humor, she's going to be a runaway hit on that show. So we'll see how it goes.
And sometimes it's difficult in that position where all you're trying to do is get the talent over and move the storyline along. And you've basically been given a question of, like, how do you feel about your match tonight against Finn Balor? And like, there's really no chance to showcase for personality. I hope that they let her do it.
Me too. All right, that's going to do it for The List and the Chris. Go to FIFOselect.com. We're going to do The List Goes On. Check it out right now. Chris, thanks for joining me again, man.
Good to see you, Jimmy.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.